Today on Straight Talk Africa, peace talks to re-establish normalcy in South Sudan are underway again in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. What is it that must be done to stop the killings, end the conflict, and restore peace to the world's youngest nation and the region? That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello there to all of our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Hayley Adams-Fitzpatrick, and I'll be your social media reporter.
Today, it's a discussion on how to end the conflict in South Sudan and restore peace and stability in the world's youngest nation and the region.
Weighed in on our topic through Facebook comments, emails and Twitter. We'll reveal some of those comments just ahead here on Straight Talk Africa.
The South Sudan peace talks in Ethiopia were extended 48 hours, but the parties attending the forum admit that progress is seeking a new path towards peace has been slow. My colleague Paul Sisko has more.
So far, South Sudan's warring partners have failed to sign a new peace deal, despite 5 days of intensive negotiations in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Church leaders taking part in the talks have urged the parties to compromise, cooperate, and work with IGAD, the regional East African group, for the sake of millions of suffering South Sudanese. Ismail Weiss is IGAD's special envoy to South Sudan.
South Sudanese stakeholders asked to be alone and continue the consultations among themselves. And so far as I can see, it's going very well. And it will be very beautiful and recommendable. And this will make the people of South Sudan very happy and very proud if the South Sudanese, without any interventions from outside, could come to a solution and lead their country into peace and stability.
At one point, I thought at the end of last year, we were moving in the right direction. Today, after seeing what I've seen here, houses burned, children shot, the discussion of more conflict and more war, cattle raiding, it's pretty disappointing. I know this is only one place, but all across South Sudan, there's conflicts like this happening, if not one place, in another.
Women activists at the talks are calling for 35% participation in all upcoming processes.
It is a time for them to decide for our country. We decide for the peace. This is what the South Sudan people need.
IGAD has drafted a bridging proposal with a president and three vice presidents, including first vice president Riek Machar, leading a transitional government. Despite several failed agreements and ceasefires, fighting and civil war has been almost continuous since 2013, 2 years after South Sudan's independence from Sudan, brokered in part and supported by Western powers. Almost 2.5 million people, mostly women and children, have been forced to seek refuge in Kenya, Uganda, Sudan, Ethiopia, the DRC, and the Central African Republic, neighboring states. Millions more have been uprooted internally, and tens of thousands of people have been killed. Paul Sisko, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Joining us here in the studio are two distinguished guests. Brian Adeba, Deputy Director of Policy in AF Project, and Ambassador Gordon Bwai, Charged Affairs Embassy of the Republic of South Sudan to the United States. Gentlemen, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you once again on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Abbasar.
You're most welcome. Last but not least is Dr. Isaac K. Gang, SPLM-IO representative to the United States, who joins us live via Skype from Dallas, Texas. Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Gang, for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Well, thank you, Sally, and I apologize. I wasn't able to be in the studio, because of the short time turnaround. I couldn't make it, but I will do my best to be there next time. I appreciate it on the show.
You're most welcome, and of course, the alternative doesn't look bad at all because you look terrific.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Later in the program, we'll give our audience a chance to call in with your question or comment. The number to call is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately. The beautiful thing about this program today, frankly, is that we're talking about South Sudan, and we have three gentlemen here from South Sudan. Any particular reason why you cannot end the killing, you cannot end the conflict, really, and enjoy your independence?
Well, it depends on what's on the table. As you know, the mediation is now being overseen by IGAD, and there was a proposal that IGAD gave. The parties to the conflict are far apart on the issues in that proposal, and it looks like at this particular point, a peace deal is not going to happen.
Do the parties really have confidence in the ability of IGAD to deliver the peace? Because it has been there before, and nothing seems to work.
We have said at the Enough Project that IGAD itself is so divided on the South Sudan issue that its mediation needs to be overseen by other bodies, notably maybe the African Union and the UN. Left to its own devices, IGAD does not have the ability to see a peaceful conclusion to this conflict. And the other issue really here is the lack of leverage that IGAD has on the warring parties. And that's one thing that the international community has to address. Without that leverage, there will be no peace in South Sudan.
What is the position of the IGAD plus? I'm talking about the Troika. We're talking about the United States. We're talking about the United Kingdom and Norway.
Oh, the position, they want peace. And they, unfortunately, though, in terms of the leverage that is needed, there has been a lot of threats without actions to follow those threats. For instance, you look at the issue of the cessation of hostilities in South Sudan. It's been disobeyed. It's been violated several times, many, many times. And IGAD and the international community can only issue warnings. So we need to get beyond the warnings and take concrete actions by hitting at the perpetrators of this conflict, and really to understand what is the root cause, what is at the root of this conflict is an incentive structure, a financial incentive structure that allows this intransigence to perpetuate itself, and we need to tackle that incentive structure by imposing financial consequences on the perpetrators of the conflict. Unless we do that, I don't think we're going to see any peace in South Sudan at the moment.
Ambassador Gordon Bwai.
Yes, first of all, I want to say thank you, Shaka,
for
inviting me at the important debate. I would disagree with the Enough Project represented by Brian, because for us, IGAD has not failed. It was the same IGAD that brought peace in 2015. What IGAD
did it actually bring peace in 2015? Is there peace? Is there something you could call peace as a result of that?
Yeah, I would say it peace. What happened in 2016 was unfortunate, but we should appreciate that IGAD brought the peace. It was IGAD that negotiated it. I don't see any difference between IGAD and African Union, because the member countries of the IGAD are also members of the African Union. And the reason why IGAD is very important is because all the regional conflicts are being addressed by regional bodies. The ECOWAS in West Africa, IGAD is addressing problems of the East African community like the Horn of Africa and things like that. Even if you try to go to African Union, they will advise you that the appropriate entity or organization to address the issue of the conflict of South Sudan is IGAD. For us as a government, IGAD has not failed, but IGAD has to be given a time, because there is the problem now with the views between Enough Project and the position of the African is that those of, especially in the Western world, they don't have patience. Like what African problems, they need time. We need trust building between the parties. Mm-hmm. So the most important thing is for IGAD to be given time. But if IGAD is being pressured by some powers that we need a peace next week, peace is not like going and playing American football. It is a process. It's not an event.
It is a process, it is not an event. I'm sure a lot of people will agree with you. But when you talk about being given more time, what about those people who are actually doing the dying? What about those people who are actually becoming internally displaced and therefore refugees in their own country, and those who are running to neighboring countries and actually are doing the suffering.
The most important thing, Shakasala, is for us to reach an agreement that will be owned by the people of South Sudan, not an agreement that is imposed by some superpowers. And you have seen that any agreement being imposed from outside cannot last long. What we need, especially, I would say there's a positive signs. You know, the cessation of hostilities that was signed yesterday, actually it was mediated by South Sudan religious groups for 3 days without IGAD. So the South Sudan religious groups mediated between South Sudan warring parties, and then they came up with a very good document, which is the cessation of hostilities that they own. What we are talking now, our position as a government, I believe even the opposition would agree, is that South Sudanese warring parties should be given time to talk among themselves, mediated by religious leaders, so that at least we reach, because we are the one who will, we are suffering, we are the one who are owning the country, not the Troika or the outsiders. So we need time for us to be given a chance to talk among ourselves and come up with a document that we will all agree on, like the cessation of hostilities of yesterday was negotiated by all the parties, and it was based on consensus.
I just want to jump in about this issue of South Sudanese being given time. As you pointed out, people are dying, and this has been going on. This call for more time has been going on since 2013. For how long will our people get displaced? For how long will more people die? The government's view is that more people should die. At the moment, we have about 4 million people displaced. They want more people displaced. That's this call for time. In terms of agreements being imposed on people, that's a fallacy. Actually, what IGAD does is shuttle diplomacy, talking to all the parties to get their viewpoints. What is presented to them at the table is what they actually said to IGAD, that this is what we want, and then they renege on it.
Your point, of course, is well made. Let's go to Dallas. What about you, Dr. Gang?
Well, Shaka, thank you so much. You know, I'm glad to be on the show, as I said early. That's, you know, the question that you ask is very, you know, is very important. My contribution to the question is, first, in order for peace to come, we need to think about what causes the war in the first place. You know, if you go back to 2013, when the government and the president manufactured a coup and kicked out all the opposition, particularly Dr. Machar and, you know, and his members, you know, we have to ask the question, why did that happen in the first place? Well, you know, the answer is very simple. We have a government that is entrenched, a government that wants power, you know, to be bestowed upon it indefinitely. And for this reason, any voice that comes in and wants to change the direction of the country is seen as you know, obviously as a you know, threat, something to be disposed, something to be dislodged. And so when you go back to 2013, when the conflict happened, and 2016, when the peace that the IGAD negotiated collapsed, there has to be a way for the people of South Sudan to know, and the viewers, especially from the continent of Africa, to know what, you know, what are the causes of all these things? Why are all these problems happening? Well, the government made it very clear that it does not want any dissenting voice. And for this reason, if you are to say that we are heading in the wrong direction, you have to be outside the country or risk being assassinated. So for us to have something, you know, to be taken as a serious peace agreement, you need a mediation that is credible. And Estelle has been the voice in terms of this resuscitation. When we were dislodged in Juba, back in 2016, with Dr. Machar being pursued for 40 days, his first word when he got to safety was resuscitation of the peace agreement, because he believes in the peace agreement that was signed in 2015 that collapsed in 2015 that collapsed in 2016. Now the world listened, the region listened. They are actually doing something to resuscitate the peace agreement. But here's the problem, Chaka. If you want to resuscitate the peace agreement, the SPLM-IO is just one part of the equation. If we call for the peace to be brought in, we need a reciprocating partner. We do not have a reciprocating partner on the other end of the table. What we have instead is a manipulating partner that wants to have peace its own way. And for this reason, we need a credible mediation. It just so happens a lot of people were asking whether, IGAD can bring peace to the country because of the credibility issue. If you are deemed incredible, there's two ways to shut people up. One, you need to prove yourself that you are credible. Number two, you need to give the chance to someone else who can do the job well. Right now, from what we see yesterday, IGAD has not managed to prove people wrong that it is credible, because what it proposed as a compromise agreement is almost verbatim. And, you know, Chaka, when I say almost verbatim, I mean almost verbatim with the position of the government in Juba. So if you want peace in the country, you cannot copy the position of one side of the conflict and present it as a compromise agreement. This is the problem.
What is the specific reason as to why, for example, the SPLM-IO seems not to have confidence in the ability of IGAD to deliver a peace that all parties could live with?
Well, if you go back to 2014, two members of the IGAD countries were actually part of the war. So we say if you are a warring party, it is very, very unlikely that you can be partial. So if you look at what's happening, there's at least two that have been very hostile towards the SPLM-IO. If you go to Kenya, we have at least three or four officials that have been forcefully abducted in the Kenyan capital and transported in a broad daylight to Juba. Where on earth can you have refugees that are staying in your country being given to someone who wants to arm them? So this is the problem. We say if we are going to have a credible mediation, we need to make sure that people are neutral. And in the IGAD countries, people are not neutral. So how can we have confidence? When I talk to people in Washington, D.C., about the concern that we have about the IGAD mediation, they say, give them a chance. So we went there reluctantly, trying to give them a chance to see if they can prove themselves. And what we have seen, basically, is actually worse than what we anticipated. We have a situation where in the text of what they call a power-sharing proposal, the government that abrogated single-handedly the peace agreement has been rewarded handsomely. So the message there is very clear. If you want to be taken care of, if you want to be taken seriously, first, you need to be belligerent. Second, you need to be intransigent. And third, you need to show bad behaviors. So because the government show all those three, guess what? Even their power sharing ratio increases. So it moves from 53 now to 55. The SPLM-IO that has been seen as the victim of the conflict has been punished for good behaviors. It has been punished for compliance. So what can we do if we have a situation where good behaviors are being punished and bad behavior being rewarded? We cannot move forward.
Isaac, you mentioned that there are countries among IGAD who you don't really believe that are neutral or that they play a neutral role. And you only mentioned Kenya, but the last time I checked, we're talking about eight countries which form up IGAD, correct?
That's correct. I mean, Kenya is just one of them. You know, you can say Uganda. Uganda is actually a warring party. In 2014, the army from Uganda fought side by side with that of the regime in Juba. So we are having people on the table that are both a defendant and also a judge. How can you expect a fair outcome from a situation like that?
But how come Uganda is being lauded, for example, for playing a very, very positive role in terms of providing sanctuary to your people who are running away to Uganda?
Well, this is what we say. That's why we sent a delegation to Uganda to meet the president, because we say we are friendly people. Do not take a side of a government that may not be there tomorrow. Just protect the people. Help us bring peace to our country, because this government trusts Uganda. If it, gets serious on the president of this regime in Juba, I can guarantee you, Chaka, there will be peace in the country tomorrow. But we feel that Uganda is very reluctant to tell the truth about what's happening. We have a government that is displacing its own people. We have a government that is killing its own people. We have a government that is depopulating the areas where the citizens are living. And then you have a country in Uganda that doesn't say anything about it. How can you have a neighbor that is in turmoil and you receive the refugees, basically making a very difficult situation even worse, and not do something to make sure that you bring peace to the country? All of the initiatives that we've seen, from Uganda seem to be a way of strengthening the status quo. So if we look at what's happening, we do not need to strengthen the status quo. We need to change completely the status quo so the people of South Sudan can have a chance to, you know, to chart a new direction. Right now, Chaka is very unlikely because, you know, of the role of these countries, you know, that are not playing a positive role.
What about the roles played by Ethiopia and Sudan?
Well, the, you know, these two countries try to be neutral, and I know it's tough. You know, it's tough to be neutral. Ethiopian must be commended for, you know, for not only hosting the mediation, but also hosting our refugees. If you look at the population in Uganda, which is extremely large, probably one of the largest you know, in the world, as has been reported by the UN, there's also another large population in Ethiopia. And this, in addition to a large population that is living right you know, right in Juba, you know, they are actually a stone throw away from the presidential palace. So you have people all over the place that are being hosted by this country. The same thing with Sudan. They are hosting our people. So Sudan and Ethiopia are trying to play a positive role, but they need to go further. You know, just like I say to the U.S. government, in order for us to solve the problem, we have to do what the Trump administration has done. I never imagined anybody solving the problem if you do not identify the problem. The U.S. has identified the problem. It has identified the culprit. The culprit is in Juba. So if we now know the location of the culprit, if we know the location of the problem, why can't IGAD do the same thing? The U.S. specifically say that this president and this government is unfit to bring peace to the country. And for this reason, once we make that statement, the question becomes, what is next? I even plod around the idea of doing, sponsoring a legislation in the Congress, something like what we did in 2002 with Sudan Peace Act. Because once you know there's a problem, there has to be the next step. And the next step is for the U.S. government and the Troika countries and the world at large to take the next step, so that we can fix the problem.
What about you, Ambassador Gordon Boy? How do you react to that?
First of all, Chaka Sala, I want to remind my friend, Dr. Isaac Gang, that we signed the cessation of hostilities yesterday in Addis, and the IO signed the cessation of hostilities, Madam Angelina signed, and there is a clause within that cessation of hostilities telling all the parties to stop negative propaganda. Because if you look at the things he's saying, you would see that he's accusing the government. This is not helping the spirit of peace, because we are still in talking now. We have not, the peace has not collapsed. We signed the cessation of hostilities, warning all the parties to stop this negative propaganda. Coming back to some issues that he raised, and I will answer them objectively without any negative tone. First of all, if the IO does not believe in IGAD, because now they're saying that Uganda at some point intervened in the south. What about Sudan? Sudan up to now is arming the SPLM, SPLA, IO, Riek Machar.
So basically you feel that...
I'm trying to say, yeah. if countries, member countries of IGAD, are not, IGAD is not credible because there are member countries that are supporting one party against the other.
Right.
What about Sudan that armed the SPLA, IO? And the chief of staff of the SPLM, IO, General Simon Garudul, is now in Khartoum. You see, so the issue should not be that, oh, Uganda, okay, we will also point fingers to Sudan, right, that is hosting them. Mm-hmm. So this is not the issue. The issue is that IGAD is a regional organization tasked to resolve the problem. It is the same IGAD that solved the problem between us and Sudan in 2005, and I think Brian will agree with me. So if IGAD is not credible, how did IGAD reach an agreement that was signed by Dr. John Garang in 2005.
But let's face it also, it was not only limited to IGAD. It also sincerely involved IGAD Plus. In fact, guarantees came from IGAD Plus.
The same Plus if you have it, Chaka Sala.
Unfortunately, you don't seem
there
to
was
have,
Plus in 2005.
You don't seem to have them anymore because you had a statement from the White House.
Okay, you want me to answer
which
the statement?
Says that, which says what? You no longer have credibility in their eyes.
No. If listen, that one is a political statement. The United States is now in Addis Ababa. The U.S. envoy is observer to the current process of the peace. Okay. Second to that, we have a diplomatic relation with the United States. We don't have any issues with the U.S. in terms of diplomacy. Mm. But the United States, the White House, is entitled to their opinion. All right, but we are talking about how to bring peace. The United States has not abandoned IGAD. Can you convince me that the United States has abandoned IGAD like what the IO representative is saying?
But it obviously seems to be on the verge of reviewing its policy towards what is going on or not going on in South Sudan.
There is a U.S. envoy now in Addis.
I think what the United States has done so far is commendable, but we need those pressures escalating. Mm-hmm. We need the United States to get its partners in the European Union, its allies, to get the African Union on board,
right,
to enact financial pressures, sanctions on the system in South Sudan, to get at the incentive structure that perpetuates this conflict. And unless we start to hit these people where it matters most, their pockets, I don't think they will change their stance for peace.
But what is the pockets, Salah? The problem with the INEP project, and I believe the INEP project should be part of the peace process so that they sign a cessation of hostilities with the government and the rest of the groups. Because the INEP project is also a problem to the peace in South Sudan. They are in offensive. John Pendergast and his colleagues are in offensive in the U.S. while we are having peace talks with the IO in Addis. And they are not party to the peace. So I'm encouraging the U.S. government to bring John Pendergast in the project because they are a warring party, in my understanding.
When you talk about John Pendergast, let's face it, the last time when you needed him, when you were still part of Khartoum, he was on your side, correct?
That is true, yes.
He was on your side. So what makes you think that for some reason he decided to be on a different side? Surely there must be something. There must be something. Let's not forget the fact that as we all talk here in this beautiful studio, air conditioning and what have you, and you all look so beautiful, your cousins, your brothers, your sisters, your aunts, your uncles are doing the suffering, either inside South Sudan or in the neighboring countries. How can we stop this, really?
That's what we are doing as a government, Shaka Sala. That's why we are in Addis Ababa searching for peace, looking for our brothers so that they come into table with us. That's what we are doing as a government.
But how are you doing that when there are critics, Ambassador Wai, who honestly say that there seems to be a disconnect between the government elite and the people?
This is a theory of INEP project. This is not an African theory.
I have been to Juba three times myself.
And then
let me address Shaka.
What I have seen is not very encouraging. To be honest with you.
We are a very young country. We cannot be
very expensive Italian suits.
We cannot be
Italian ties.
In three years, Shaka Sala. You want us to be like to be in 21st century in the level of US in 3 years? We became independent in 2011 with nothing.
I'm not asking for that. For example, let's talk about corruption.
There is corruption in Washington.
People take space. But you are a very young country, very enormously rich, at least wealth in terms of resources. You have plenty of fertile land. In fact, you have more than enough. Any particular reason, sincerely, why some critics think your government seems to be socially, politically, and economically insensitive to its ordinary people?
No, that is not true. That is not true. These leaders you are indicting, they fought the war to liberate their own people.
And we know,
anybody
we know
insulting,
they did.
Even that's why I'm not happy with John Pendergast and the project.
They were not fighting the war alone. They were being assisted by these people who were not necessarily carrying the AK-47.
But when you are insulting the leadership, okay, the leaders like President Salva Kiir, who fought for half of his life to bring the independence of South Sudan, is it not like insulting George Washington?
Well, in fact, if you talk about that, then let's bring in Brian himself, because he was part of this group which came up with this report, which talks about, for example, the manner in which government officials have actually been abusing power in the sense that they have been looting the coffers of the state.
They have incredible property. These are allegations.
In neighboring countries and in Europe and America.
Shaka, let me jump in. The core issue here is that we really have a corrupt government. And when we talk of corruption here, we're not just talking of petty corruption. We're talking a total seizure of government. of a hijacking of all the institutions of government that are supposed to offer accountability. Right now, as
the capture of state.
The Guptas in South Africa. Exactly. This is what happened. If you look at the Anti-Corruption Commission right now, the Constitution says that the audit reports of the Auditor General should be made public. Since 2012, those reports have never been made public. Do you know why? And it's because the system is deeply, you know, involved in this corruption, and they don't want that to be seen.
Unfortunately, Brian, time is not our best ally, but we will come back later to that particular point. You are watching Straight Talk Africa live from Washington. It's time to bring in our social media reporter, Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick. Take it away, Heidi.
Thank you very much, Sharka. 5 years of civil war in South Sudan have resulted in an unprecedented humanitarian crisis that's affecting 7 million people. That's more than half of the country's population who are struggling to survive. Government troops loyal to President Salva Kiir continue to clash with forces loyal to opposition leader Riek Machar. The warring factions have made yet another effort to jumpstart this peace process during meetings in Ethiopia. And so this leads us to our question of the week, in which we asked, what, if anything, can be done to bring peace to South Sudan? Let's start here with a tweet from JR1, who writes, it's an internal conflict, and this requires internal solutions, not any external involvement. However, it takes individual character and unity. We have another tweet from Mildred Tuhaisi, and she writes, the earlier the two men, that Salva Kiir and Riek Machar, realize that South Sudan is bigger than them, peace talks will be respected and effected. Now to our social media comment of the week from Facebook fan Oburoba Obibini Kwasi Amawafu Kodua, who writes, this war is mainly driven by tribalism, and the best remedy is for each side to put away their differences, followed by a free and transparent election without Salva Kiir and Riek Machar. Let's go to another comment from a Facebook fan, Taidor Deng Chuol, who writes, the only way peace can come to South Sudan is if the country could be ruled by the United Nations. The South Sudanese cannot lead themselves. They need someone to teach them. And our last Facebook comment comes from Kinaharu Haruna, who writes, why can't these two old, mature men place their country above themselves? Can't they see the suffering of their people are going through due to their selfish fights? Africa has to learn to put its people first above personal interests. So we have a reminder for you that we appreciate all of your feedback. If you are a new fan, do drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. And to comment on our Facebook page, just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. And be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. To join our YouTube channel, sign up to VOA TV to Africa. And you can follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Of course, Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook. You can simply go to VOA's Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website. If you want to watch us live on your mobile device, you can download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what is on tap for next week's program. On the next Straight Talk Africa, new U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo calls Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed to congratulate him on his new position and offer America's support for the Ethiopian people and the government as the East African nation continues its efforts to strengthen democratic reforms and promote the unity of the nation. Moving forward in Ethiopia on the next Straight Talk Africa. So that is all for today's social media segment. Shaka, you and your guests have a lot of comments to discuss, so I'm going to hand it back to you.
Indeed. Thanks you very much, Heidi. And, of course, our topic for today is a discussion on how to end the conflict in South Sudan and restore peace and stability in the world's youngest nation and the region. And our distinguished guests are Brian Adeba, Deputy Director, INAF Project, Ambassador Gordon Mbuai, the Charge d'Affaires, Embassy of the Republic of South Sudan to the United States, and Dr. Isaac K. Gung, SPOMIO representative to the United States, who joins us via Skype from Dallas, Texas. Well, Gentlemen, once again, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Well,
you're most welcome. I'm sorry that I had to cut you off, sure. Brian, because there is no democracy in Studio 47 when a producer says you have to go for a break.
You have to go.
I hope that you'll find some space in your beautiful South Sudanese heart to forgive me for that.
Absolutely.
Could you pick up from where you left?
Absolutely.
The capture of the state.
Yes, this is
who has captured the state.
Well, we have the high-level government officials, all of them, most of them, involved in deep corruption in South Sudan. So,
would you be in a position, for example, to name names?
Well, we've named them in our reports. We've named the former chief of general staff of the army, Paul Malong. We've named the in-laws of the president. We've named several high-ranking army officers.
Why do you keep going around? What about? It seems to me that you have also named the president.
We've mapped out a lot of information about the president. We've revealed that. We've revealed businesses owned by his family members, including his son-in-law. It's all there on our website in this report. So what we're really talking about is prolific corruption. We're talking about a debilitating...
You're talking about malignant type of corruption here, not benign.
Corruption is actually not something that is... it is the system, okay? We have to understand this. Corruption is the system. The president pays lip service to fighting corruption. He talks about it all the time.
But the government has denied that. You know that.
Well, let me give you an example. The audit reports of the government of South Sudan have never been made public since 2012. And you have to ask yourself, why? Why is this happening in contravention of an article in the Constitution itself that says that these reports have to be made public?
Maybe they might argue that that is a matter of sovereignty.
No, what is sovereignty? You need an act of parliament to repeal that act that says that audit reports have to be made public, and that hasn't happened. And you cannot. It's not rocket science. It's because very high-ranking members of the government that are closely allied to the president and in the ruling party are deeply involved in this corruption, and the government does not want that to happen. And we've documented that. That's just one example. If you go to our website, and I encourage all the viewers here to go to our website on at enough.org, you'll find that information there. We've done that. So we've documented that. People like Gordon Boy, they don't like the Enough Project because we are pointing out what they should be doing. Government talks about fighting corruption but absconds its responsibility, pays lip service to it, and expects that the international community should believe them. When they say that there's no corruption or that they're fighting corruption. They're not fighting any corruption. Corruption, the system itself is so corrupt. Corruption is not an aberration. It is the system.
You mean it is the norm?
It is the norm.
Let's go to Dr. Gang Mindaras. What about you, Dr. Gang? Do you agree with the views of your fellow panelists here?
First of all, to my brother, representative of the government, Boy, I wasn't hostile at all. What I was saying earlier was just the fact of the matter. On the question, especially from our social media people, how can we bring peace to South Sudan and the question of corruption? You know, Brian and the Enough Project has done a good job. Clearly, if you are implicated, the sense is that you will not accept what is being said. You're going to look at the Enough Project as a credible investigator, research organization. This is the reality. But the facts are there. Anyone can go and see them. For peace to come to our country, going to the question of the peace, I said earlier, you need two willing sides sitting together and willing to iron their differences and come up with a solution. But what's clear, even you, Chaka, know this, the government does not want to hear the name of Machar, because they know that the support that he has in the country, which is, in my opinion, no less than 60%, is a threat to them, because they want to be in power indefinitely, and they don't want anyone who has a chance of being looked at as a potential replacement to come to the country. So their position, especially in this negotiation, is to, you know, to have something that doesn't include Machar. So that right there is a problem, because when you want to have an inclusive process, you want all the citizens of the country, all of them. But you most importantly want the main players. And I don't think there's anyone more important to peace in our country than Dr. Machar. The reason I say this is because he really wants peace. But the other side wants to send a message or want to misinform the world that he's interested in taking power by force. At no time, and I mean no time, has Dr. Machar pick up arm to take power by force. Each time he leaves the country, under duress, he leaves the country barely surviving, especially the last time he survived an assassination attempt. He had trouble 40 long days, Chaka, 40 long days until he was extracted in Congo. So the plan for this government is that, you know, we do not want all of our people, especially those citizens that have a chance, to be a potential leader in our country. Once we put that aside and we accept ourselves as one people, I think there will be a good opportunity for peace to come. I travel across this country. I look our people in the eyes, even people who support the government, and they know that I'm SPLM-IO representatives, welcoming to their houses. So the message is that the people are tired of war, Shaka. They are tired of war, and they want to see who is it that prevents peace from coming. And I can tell you the answer is in Juba. Once we know that, and the mediation knows that, and the world knows that, I think the peace will come to our country, because we will have incentive for, or incentive or disincentive for one side to not hold the whole country hostage so that it can stay in power.
Very interesting. Talking about Dr. Riek Machar, who apparently happens to be under house arrest in South Africa. What about the issue regarding the general who, in fact, had replaced him? We're talking about General Taban Deng Gai. The last time I checked, he issued a statement saying that he's no longer playing that role, at least of playing the role of the SPLM-IO. He has, in fact, effectively joined the government in power.
Yeah, there's one thing, Shaka Sala, you need to understand, because a lot of people are confused here. Number one, my brother, Dr. Gang, talks about that the government does not want Riek Machar to come back. First of all, the entire world, including the United States, on September 20, 2016, decided that Riek Machar and President Salva Kiir cannot work together. You remember when Ambassador Donald Booth went to the Congress and gave that report. Why the conclusion is reached is because in 2013, Riek Machar could not work together with President Salva Kiir as the vice, and he was reshuffled out. In 2016, a fighting happened in J1, a dog fight, very bad fight. A lot of people died. Now, I think you remember on 26th of March, the heads of the state of IGAD made a conclusion that if Riek Machar wants to be relocated, he can be taken to another country. Basically, when you want to bring peace, people who can work together and transform the society, not somebody who cannot work together with President Salva Kiir.
Does it really take one party, or is it about action and reaction?
No, Riek Machar, not the organization. What is being rejected is not the supporters of Riek. Riek as individual will be outside the interim period. But his supporters, including Dr. Aida Gang, are welcome. That's why we are talking to them, and why Riek Machar is one of the negotiators in Addis Ababa. Let me come to your second part of your question about Taban Deng Gai. A lot of people are confusing the RCs which were signed in 2015 with the SPLM reunification under Arusha. You have to differentiate these two things. Arusha agreement is to unify the factions of the SPLM. The agreement that was signed in Addis Ababa was only to address the governance in the state level. So these things are different. Taban Deng Gai, based on the agreement of 2015, is still within the power ratio of the SPLM-IO as an organization that fought the government and negotiated the peace. That's why he's the first vice president. But under Arusha agreement, Taban Deng Gai, based on the Arusha principles, all the factions have been united. And now, you remember 2 weeks ago, there was a convention done, attended by President Museveni, of SPLM reunification.
But so, has he, in fact, demonstrated, frankly, that he has a following?
Of course.
Which
of course.
Following?
Come on, Shaka, so, you are questioning the following of Tabande Ndiaye in South Sudan or within the SPLM-SPLA-IO. Where is Dr. Diomato? No, don't interrupt me, Brian. Let me finish the question because I did not interrupt you. No, I am the one. Let me finish. If you look at the leadership of SPLM-SPLA-IO in 2005, the first convention they did in Pagak, if you look at the top leadership, with the exception of Riak, all of them are in Juba with Tabande Ndiaye. You will agree with me. You can do all your research.
So who does, for example, Dr. Isaac Gang represent?
Dr. Isaac Gang is representing the faction of people loyal to Riek Machar. I'm not denying that SPLM-IO is not divided.
The panel, why don't we ask him to respond
SPLM-IO
to that?
SPLM-IO is divided into two.
Why don't we let Dr. Gang respond to that since he's here?
Well, thank you, Shaka. I mean, I'm reluctant to mention the name of that gentleman, but since his name is brought up, I think you said it all. The guy has nobody, and it's unfortunate the people of South Sudan are presented, with such an individual. Because as of now, if you ask any person and every citizen of our country, they look at this gentleman as the spoiler. The reason why peace collapsed in 2016. Is because of him, because he saw opportunity. He plotted with the president, and then they both abrogated the peace agreement. The only people that he has are his family and a couple of leaders that are in Juba, that wants job. Right now in our country, they're the problem, Chaka. If you want job, there's one way to get it. You don't, the only one qualification that you need to get job in Juba is an ability to insult and demonize Riek Machar. If you can do that, You will come to the airport, you will get a big reception, you will be received by a big delegation, you will be paraded on the national TV, and you will be put in the hotel. So if this is the problem, because they don't see what is happening as a conflict that needs to be resolved. They think they should, they will be able to bribe or coerce people that are against the government. Using trickery and material things. But the problem is that this will not solve the problem. What we need is a solution that will bring peace to our country, not to manipulate people into joining you so you can discredit the other person. Tabande Ndiaye has no following. And as you said, he already joined the government, and the case is closed. There's no other SPLM-IO other than the one led by Riek Machar.
If Tabande Ndiaye did have the following, probably there wouldn't, in fact, be any more war. Let's go to the telephone caller, and he is from Nigeria. Good evening, Okolu. Hello?
Mr. Shaka, my own is just a question.
You sound like Patrick. Patrick, how are you?
Yes. My question to our guest, sir. Why is it that in Africa today, when Mr. A contest any election and the election did not favor him, he will end up to form a militia gang to topple the opponent? Is it because of money or power?
Very interesting.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the question. Let's come to you, Brian. You could respond to that and also combine it with what you wanted to say or add in as far as the status.
Yeah.
Of Tabande Ndiaye is concerned.
Let me answer the listener's question first. Why do we form a why do the those who have been locked out of the power structure form a militia to contest the system? I think it manifests a huge trust, a lack of trust in the institutions of the government to actually arbitrate on conflicts. And South Sudan is, of course, a typical case. We would not have had this war if the institutions of the SPLM, the ruling party, were strong enough to actually mitigate the conflicts between the various factions of the SPLM. Coming to the status of Tabande Ndiaye, when they met at the Crown Hotel, he formed his faction of the SPLM-IO. So the Crown Hotel faction of the SPLM-IO is now part of the government. And that speaks volumes about Taban and the constituency that he claims to have. In fact, Taban doesn't seem to have any constituency. When Riek Machar was forced out of this, was forced into exile in South Africa, the war increased in intensity. It spread to other regions that were hitherto peaceful. That shows.
But Juba kept insisting that the fact that Taban Dengai came on board with his colleagues, people like Ezeke Gatkuwath, the Minister of Petroleum and what have you, that helped to restore, in their words, not mine, peace and stability.
That's a big lie. In fact, following Dr. Riek Machar's departure from Juba, the conflict intensified. We, like the Equatorians, for instance, the three states in Equatoria that were previously peaceful, the conflict spread there. The conflict
we
spread
obviously
to...
We have incontrovertible evidence because you can see how many people have been running away to neighboring countries.
Absolutely. So the Crown Hotel faction of Taban Deng doesn't have any support. It's part and parcel of the government. It's done as far as any observer of South Sudan is concerned. It's really done. But it speaks to about to an issue that we really need to understand. The government is fond of short-term peace pacts, elite pacts between leaders. It's all about divvying up of positions, and they think that's the solution to the problem.
Positions?
The structure, yeah, positions.
Do they get paid?
Apparently. So he got the Crown Hotel faction got the position of first vice president, and I presume there's money there or whatever. But the truth of the matter is that if we go for these elite pacts between individuals and fail to address the structural problems at the root of this conflict, we will have this conflict continuing.
Okay. Interesting. Let me ask you this question, Ambassador Goldenboy. There are some people who are asking me to ask you this question. What is the financial status of your embassy?
Well, before I answer this one, let me answer our brother in Nigeria who called from
Can
Nigeria.
You combine both?
I will combine
yeah, sure.
both of them. Patrick is right. You see, the reason is very simple, and I believe even Brian will not deny the facts. When Riek Machar was the vice president of President Salva Kiir for 8 years, he didn't even have any problem. When he was reshuffled out in July 2013, this is where he began to say that there is something wrong in the government, including those of FDs, those of Pagan Amum, when they were in the government, and I believe Brian would not object to that.
It actually started earlier than that.
Yeah,
they started challenging before they were reshuffled out of the government.
But you haven't talked about how they ended up being sacked.
Well, that
how
one
did
is
they
it?
End up being sacked?
No, that one is it. I'm coming. But I'm answering. The point you raised is very critical.
Talk about
Mr.
the
Patrick.
Political Bureau. The
no,
Political
no.
Bureau.
The Political Bureau is the SPLM. I'm talking about the government, because the government in Africa is the one that is assumed to be the employer, with the one to be milked, right? Now, when these people were milking the cow that he's talking about, Riek Machar, vice president, he was the share of every cluster, everything. If there's a corruption in South Sudan, Riek Machar would be part of it, and I think he will not deny. All these people, FDs, those of Pagan Amum, they didn't have any problem. But when the president Salva Kiir shuffled them out, and then they said that, something is wrong with Salva Kiir, we have to get rid of him. It comes to what he said, because don't forget that Riek Machar staged a coup against Dr. Yon Gareng in 1991. He had a history of violence. Don't forget that. Let's go with the facts.
Can you say the same thing about Rebecca Garang?
Rebecca Garang.
Mother of the nation of South Sudan.
Rebecca Garang is somebody who is jealous because Salva Kiir reshuffled her out of the government in 2007. That is her problem. With
really?
Salva Kiir. Yes, that is the problem.
Let me correct
don't
that.
Interrupt
let
me. No,
let,
no,
let me
Brian
correct
is interrupting
that.
Me.
Let me
Brian interrupting me.
Yeah.
Now, Mr. Patrick is right in the sense that when you are in the government, everything is okay. Then we dance everything. When you are removed from the government, you go and mobilize your ethnic group that we are marginalized. This is what is happening in South Sudan.
So when you are a member of the government, you do not have the right, for example, to raise the issues of accountability?
Riek Machar was presiding, running South Sudan when Salva Kiir was the first vice president in Sudan. Riek Machar was the one actually running the South. And he did not question that. But when he was removed from his position, he said that something wrong in South Sudan. So this is connected with positions.
Actually,
so the whole rebellion of Riek Machar, Riek Machar started a war because he was removed from the government.
So
simple.
What about that? Basically, what he's saying, frankly, is that people in your country, and probably across most of Africa, are patriotic to their stomachs. the stomachs of their families and friends, not society.
I don't deny that. I don't deny that. But in the case of South Sudan, that's a very simplistic assessment. First of all, let me just give you the background. Prior to the dismissal in July 2013 of Riek Machar and the other cabinet colleagues, they had started a process. This is after the SPLM conducted a nationwide assessment of how it is ruling the country.
The and political, was it the Politburo?
Yeah, the Politburo got the results, and the results were not nice. They were saying, look, we messed up. And they now decided to call the president to call for a meeting of the Politburo so that they look into a lot of other things. There was the leadership issue that was coming up, and everyone was gearing up for that too, to contest that. And it's perfectly legitimate.
Yeah.
So to say that the dismissal prompted those of Riek Machar and the other political detainees to call for reforms is inaccurate.
Thank you. But you didn't answer the other question about
your
embassy.
Me.
No, embassy. What is the financial status of your embassy? And in fact, several other embassies around the world belong to Juba.
Well, it is true that we have economic situation in our country. The oil price went down and all these things that delays of salaries. But we are okay. Even the Sudan government, we are even better.
It also has problems.
6 months, yes. Whilst we are late, sometimes 6 months. But that one, we are managing it. The government is working.
And when the former foreign minister in Khartoum raised that issue, he was fired. Let me come to you again for the last time, really, Isaac.
Well, thank you, Chuck. I really appreciate being on the show. And to the question that Patrick asked, I don't think it applies to Dr. Machar. Now, one thing our people and viewers need to know is that Dr. Riek Machar is a serial corrector. When you hear my brother talking about 1991, 2013, 2016, this is because Machar does not let things go the wrong direction. When he sees something wrong, he will say it. He did not start speaking up because he was reshuffled. Riek Machar, you can't even go back to the record, was accused of running a parallel government because he raised this issue early, even during the constitution-making process. This is because he saw the direction that the country was heading. So he was questioning the direction. And this is one of the reasons why he was kicked out. This is one of the reasons why he was almost assassinated. So for this, we need to get the record straight so our people can differentiate between misinformation and what is facts. Machar is not about power. Machar is not about violence. He has not started a war in 2016. He has not started a war in 2013. Each time, he barely escaped assassination and barely survived. So what I want our people to know, and especially my brother Gordon Boy, is that we need peace for our people. Whether you are in power today or tomorrow, the bottom line is that our people need peace. I look into their eyes. I talk to them. They want peace now. You know, manipulation, tricks, all of this, political gimmicks will not bring us peace. You know, once we sit down and say the problem is in Juba, the problem is that the government in South Sudan does not want peace to come to the country. So long
you,
as it involves Machar, we will not get anywhere. So I think this is an important point to make, Chaka. Sorry.
Let me ask you the last question before we go.
Okay.
You heard, of course, the ambassador talking about how the international community has this perception about Machar, Dr. Riek Machar, being the bad guy. Why?
This is misinformation, because if you look, this is like, you know, when you was kicked out of Juba, it's kind of like you being...
You have 20 seconds.
Yes. So he's not. He's not. They cannot point you to a single instance that shows that. And this is why we need to get our story straight. Machar is not a problem. If you look at his absence, problem exacerbated. So if he's the problem, why don't we have solution in South Sudan after his absence?
Well, on that note, our distinguished guests are Brian Adeba, Ambassador Gordon Boy, and Dr. Isaac K. Gang. Thanks to our field stations, along with our viewers and listeners, for many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning is Daybreak Africa with James Batte. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, South Sudan. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.